Today is Monday, May 27th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, what the parliamentary results of the latest election in Europe means. Also, U.S. President Donald Trump continues his state visit in Japan, where North Korea was just one of many topics discussed.
The Prime Minister and I continue our close consultation in pursuit of peace and security on the Korean Peninsula.
And go ahead, turn your record on. These stories and more are ahead on today's International Edition. Provisional results show that pro-European parties retained a firm grip on the EU Parliament though Eurosceptic opponents saw strong gains. To break down the results thus far, I spoke with reporter Catherine Field in Paris, France. I began our conversation by asking Catherine to explain what the provisional results mean for the makeup of the next European Parliament.
Essentially, what it means is that it will almost be business as usual, because the traditional center parties have lost ground. Parties that are in favor of European Union policies and green parties who are in favor of more of an engagement for climate change and environmental issues are in the majority. So they'll be able to keep everything going as it did before. The real fear was that parties that were anti-European Union, anti-European integration would win the day. They haven't won the day. So essentially it means business as usual, Europe is back, and the incredible turnout, the highest turnout that the European Union have seen since 1989.
So if we dive into these numbers, I mean, you mentioned that there was a concern that so-called Eurosceptic parties would come up with a larger share of members in Parliament. But from what I understand by reading the numbers, there were some advancements in those areas. But as you said, you know, the Green parties, the other areas, won the day, so to speak. So in terms of driving an agenda for the next five-year term, what do you think that the Parliament will be able to achieve?
Always a big question with the European Parliament. I think they've been trying to delve into this problem since it was set up. Certainly, as you rightly say, the far right did well. They did well in France, Italy, Poland, and Hungary, and they do have between them 112 seats in the parliament. But bear in mind, this is a parliament that has 751 seats, so they might be able to get up to some mischief, but they certainly won't be able to hijack the agenda. I think what we're going to see, and this is a result of the incredible turnout for the Greens Party, is we're going to see more to do with climate change, and not just climate change in the environment, but more legislation for everyday life. If you just look at the last couple of years, the European Parliament has come up with laws that have made it illegal to use plastic carrier bags, single-use plastic carrier bags in Europe. The other thing that you're going to start seeing now is that between now and the end of this year, the top jobs in the European Union and the executive is going to have to be decided. So that's going to be interesting. You're going to have the European Parliamentary President who's got to be decided. You've also got the Commissioner, the one who heads the executive.
If we take a look at things across the channel from the continent to the United Kingdom, Prime Minister Theresa May is going to step down soon. Brexit still has not been negotiated. Do we have any inkling of what those discussions may entail with this new body?
What I think we're going to really see is that, first of all, we've had a large turnout for the European parliamentary elections. That means that across Europe, there is a feeling that the European Union, this model, is working. So I think we're going to see people like the French President, Emmanuel Macron, much more strengthened. We're going to see the German Chancellor, Angela Merkel, strengthened, feeling as though they're able to defend the European Union. And so when it comes to Brexit, I think we're going to see again people like Emmanuel Macron getting really tough with the United Kingdom and saying to them, look, you can't hold us back anymore. We now have this mandate from the populace across Europe that they want this to continue. So I think you're going to see, especially from France and perhaps even from other countries, Denmark perhaps, the Netherlands, who are going to start getting a bit tougher on the United Kingdom and say, look, you're holding us back, either go or stay, but you've got to stop this sitting on the fence.
That was reporter Catherine Field. She spoke to me on the phone from her office in Paris, France. Now, in my discussion with Catherine, I mentioned that embattled British Prime Minister Theresa May will be stepping down from her post. Well, the race for her successor just got more competitive. British Home Secretary Sajid Javid is joining the race, and he made his announcement via a video post on Twitter Monday.
My message is simple. It's time to rebuild trust, to find unity, and to create new opportunities for our country.
Javid is the son of a Pakistani immigrant couple, and his father worked as a bus driver and shopkeeper. The 49-year-old joins a crowded field that already includes former Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson and former House of Commons leader Andrea Leadsom. The winner of the contest will be the next Conservative leader and by default become Britain's Prime Minister. That race is expected to be decided by late January. Sorry, July. Here are other major stories from around the globe. Indonesian police have arrested six people suspected of plotting to assassinate four state officials during a wave of civil unrest in Jakarta last week. Officials say a roadside bombing claimed by the Taliban killed 10 Afghan soldiers in the country's west, while insurgent attacks on security checkpoints in the northern Afghanistan region killed four policemen. Fiat Chrysler proposed on Monday to merge with France's Renault to create the world's third largest automaker and save billions of dollars needed to invest in the race to make new electric and autonomous vehicles. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website and with our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. U.S. President Donald Trump continued his four-day state visit to Japan on Monday. His visit to Tokyo was meant to showcase the alliance between the two nations and has been filled with a busy schedule, including sumo matches and a visit with Japan's new emperor. The president also held bilateral talks with Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. Now, to get a full report of the day's events in Tokyo, I spent some time on the phone with VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman, who's traveling with the president. Steve, the president and Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe discussed a whole wide range of topics on Monday, one of which was North Korea. And can you share with what we know about those discussions?
Sure. Well, what we know is the president and the prime minister said to reporters after their summit. And, of course, there was a lot of attention on recent remarks that the president had made regarding some short-range North Korean missile tests, which National Security Advisor John Bolton had said were in violation of United Nations Security Council resolutions. Shinzo Abe, the Japanese Prime Minister, also said that those tests did violate those resolutions. But Trump said he begs to differ with his own national security advisor and the Japanese prime minister, that they're not a big deal and he's not personally bothered by them. And he is confident that the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un will deliver on the promises that he has made at their two summits to President Trump.
In addition to North Korean discussions, bilateral trade was also on the menu. Was any indication given about progress?
Well, we weren't expecting any progress to occur during this summit. This visit was much more focused on ceremonial than substance. But what the president did say is that he expected a bilateral trade deal between the United States and Japan to be made in August following the elections that will be held here in Japan in July the previous month. Those elections are scheduled to be for the upper house, the House of Counselors, which is the less powerful branch of the Japanese Diet or Parliament. But there could also be a House of Representatives election as well that would be quite important and would help Prime Minister Abe secure his hold on power. But of course, the United States had pulled out of this 12-nation Trans-Pacific Partnership, with which Japan had spearheaded with Washington when Barack Obama, Trump's predecessor, was president. And much to the frustration of many Japanese and also many Americans, it basically looks like much of what this administration wants to get is what was contained in the 12-nation TPP, but President Trump wants a deal just with Japan.
The president's visit to Japan also comes at a time when tension is rising with Tehran. I understand that was also something that was discussed between the two leaders?
Yes. During the opening minutes of the bilateral one-on-one meeting between President Trump and Prime Minister Abe, I was among several reporters that were in the room, and I asked President Trump about that, whether he was open to having the Japanese mediate between the United States and Iran. And he said that he had had conversations with Abe about that, and he does believe that Iran would like to talk, and if they'd like to talk, we'd like to talk also, Trump told me, and he said, we'll see what happens. But he did indicate very clearly in response to my question that he is fine with the Japanese, in a sense, mediating between Tehran and Washington.
The president's trip is coming to a close with about a day left. What's on the docket for the president on Tuesday?
Yes, before he departs Japan, he is going to go out to the Yokosuka Naval Base. And first he will land on Marine One on a Japanese helicopter carrier. Now, this is a very interesting symbolic visit because, as President Trump said on Monday, the Japanese have committed to buying 100 additional F-35 stealth fighters. And after he visits that helicopter carrier, then he will make another short hop at Yokosuka over to the USS Wasp. Now, this is a U.S. Navy amphibious assault ship, and because it will be Memorial Day still back in the United States, the president will make Memorial Day remarks to the U.S. Service personnel who will be brought aboard the USS Wasp.
And that was VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman traveling with the president in Tokyo, Japan. As a police search operation continued Monday at the apartment building of one of the suspects linked to the Lyon bomb blast that injured 13 people, residents of the neighborhood said they felt afraid and confused. Now, this resident said that she was really, really scared because the suspects were people that they ran into every day and that this could happen to anybody. French police have arrested four people, including a 24-year-old computer science student of Algerian nationality in connection with Friday's bomb blast. The case is being handled as a terrorism investigation. It was committed in broad daylight and used an explosive device capable of hitting a large number of people with screws and metal balls packed into a bag. A police source has told Reuters News those arrested included the university student, who does not have a police record, a minor from Lyon, and a woman. The Paris prosecutor's office said that the minor was a member of the main suspect's family circle, and French media say the woman was in the main suspect's mother. Security camera footage from the incident shows a partially masked suspect wheeling a bicycle to the scene before leaving a bag outside a branch of a popular bakery chain. And you're listening to VOA's International Edition.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an exclusive interview with the Prime Minister of Buganda, Charles Maiga. Buganda is the largest, most influential kingdom in Uganda. Buganda and the future on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller. San Francisco, California recently became the first U.S. city to ban police and other city agencies from using facial recognition technology. And that city is not alone. Many people are growing wary of the powerful technology at the same time that other people are embracing it. Deanna Mitchell brings us that story.
San Francisco, the unofficial tech capital of the world, recently became the first U.S. city to ban facial recognition technology used by police and other officials. Those who support the ban say this type of tech is a threat to civil liberties.
The fact that law enforcement, other government agencies would be able to track every single resident as they move throughout the city, and the potential effect of chilling people's ability to engage in First Amendment protected activity is quite concerning.
This is a technology that misidentified 28 members of the United States Congress, but really can be terribly misused by governments.
China has embraced the facial recognition technology as part of its massive domestic security operation, but even uses it in some public restrooms to dispense toilet paper. Facial recognition software is not new, but it has become much more sophisticated in recent years. Apple uses facial recognition as a feature to unlock the latest iPhones. Amazon shareholders voted on two measures to limit Amazon's use of its own facial recognition technology. Both failed. Lawmakers in Washington are still assessing the technology's impact on civil rights.
We've never seen anything like this technology before.
Critics argue that facial recognition technology is sometimes flawed and fails more often when identifying women and people of color.
At a minimum, Congress should pass a moratorium on the police use of facial recognition, as the capacity for abuse, lack of oversight, and technical immaturity poses too great a risk, especially for marginalized communities.
But some on the cutting edge of biometrics say that the technology has uses that benefit humanity.
I think it's an interesting and exciting time for biometrics. I think this idea that it's the bad guy, you know, there's lots of dystopian images of how biometrics could become this horrible thing, and I think that's really misplaced.
Hansen's company, Credence ID, uses facial recognition technology and other biometrics like thumbprints to help identify people in the developing world who need things like food, medical supplies, or infant formula. He thinks San Francisco's ban is too severe.
A ban seems to be the wrong move to me, certainly. There needs to be reviews of how the practices are used. We can debate about where it belongs in our society and how much of an untrusting society we want to have. But getting rid of biometrics, it's kind of like getting rid of the internet because it can be used for bad.
Other cities in the U.S. are considering a similar ban to San Francisco's, while companies, governments, and organizations find new uses for it. What's unclear is whether any regulation on the technology can keep up as its growth explodes. Deanna Mitchell for VOA News, San Francisco.
Vinyl records are becoming a popular thing again in the United States after almost disappearing from American markets when they were replaced over the years by audio cassettes, CDs, and digital music downloaded right to your phone and other devices. With vinyl records coming back, record pressing plants are being established, including one recently opened in Alexandria, Virginia, not a short distance away from Washington, D.C. Alina Golinata recently visited that plant, and Anna Rice narrates this story.
Vinyl records are making a big comeback. And for entrepreneur Eric Astor, this is good news.
So I've put everything I have into this to make it a success.
His company used to order records produced at a plant in Germany. But with demand growing fast, he decided to invest all his savings into opening a record-pressing plant of his own to take advantage of the changing musical landscape.
In about 2013, the business, you know, the industry got so busy that we decided, you know, for us to stay relevant and service our customers the way we want to service them and the way they were requesting, is we needed to add pressing here in the state. So that's when we started to look for new equipment.
But that proved to be no easy task. At the time, no one was producing new quality equipment for pressing vinyl records. So Astor had to settle on used pressing machinery he found in Mexico. Records are made of polyvinyl chloride. Special shavings of various colors are poured into the pressing machine, and a special metallic matrix stamps the audio track.
Then after that, the records will cool for 24 hours and then move into physical QC, where every single record is inspected for defects.
The record is covered with a continuing groove that spirals all the way to the center. Because they're fragile and take long to manufacture, the quality control is very thorough.
We listen to one copy all the way through, at least one copy. So there's somebody back there that's listening to the records as they come off the press, and then we're pulling samples.
After that is done, the records are put into their covers, sealed, and sent to music stores. And though vinyl records are more high maintenance compared to CDs or platforms like Spotify, it's worth it, says Rader.
It was very easy, and is very easy, to put digital music on and walk away from it to do something else. So in some way, it doesn't beg for attention. And it, in that way, it becomes, for me, a little less special. A record requires you to be in the same room with it. You're tending to it, right? You have to flip it over. You can't just let it spin off, and you know. So it's a more sort of visceral, almost personal experience.
The new plant has yet to pass the test of time. But since vinyl records apparently have, Furnace Record employees hope their plant will too. For Alina Galinati in Alexandria, Virginia, NRI's VOA News.
And before I go, today is Memorial Day in the United States. The holiday is traditionally observed on the last Monday in May to honor the men and women who died while serving in the U.S. military. And on behalf of our director, Patrice Martin, and engineer, John Dryden, thank you so much for joining us today. Now, for pictures, videos, stories, and more, be sure to follow Voice of America on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a magnificent Monday.